This interview with McCall Mateen was recorded on April 7th, 2021, during the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Workshop, Inside Stories, Perspectives on Incarceration.
You are right. I've dedicated most of my working career working with the people behind the bars and the incarcerated. And the goal is to try to inspire them or to give them some insight so they can return, you know, be a returning citizen and stay out of the jail. Get out of the system, stay out of the system. You know, one of the problems is recidivism is very high. Some people say it can be up to 50%, 60% people being, coming back behind the wall. So I try to give the brothers some insight through my own personal experience, as well as experiences of other people that I know. And then also, since I am a Muslim, I'm the Muslim chaplain. So I try to represent the religion of Islam to give them some, you know, some insights from the Quran and the life of Muhammad, prayers of peace be upon him, to be successful in living, you know. The title of chaplain really means one who is there to protect everybody's right for their worship. So as a Muslim chaplain, I'm there to serve all of the people there, whether they're Christian, whether they're Muslim, whether they're Jewish, whether they're Native American. I've dealt with people who are Wiccans, people who are into other faith, Rastafarian, except. So what I do is I'm there to make sure that whatever their religion calls for, I'm there to help them get their religious rights. Now, when it comes to specific worship and services, then I concentrate specifically with the Muslim population. Generally, people that want to change are those who are able to change. You got a lot of people come to the institution and they just want to do time, you know, do their bit and go home. And then those are the people that more than likely will come back. But when you find a person that really is looking for change, then they're there and they're open and they're receptive to positive reinforcement. The highlight is when you see somebody who has gone home and they run up to you and say, man, I want to thank you. I want to thank you, man. Some of the things that you told me, man, really helped me out. And that's a highlight. The low point, and I won't say it's a low point, but one of the difficulties is when you have to go to an incarcerated person and let them know that their mother or father died or a loved one died. And you're the one who, you know, generally, a lot of guys, when they say the chaplain wants you, they're reluctant to even come to the office because they know it might be bad news. So I guess that probably is I won't say it's a low point, but it's one of the difficulties of being a chaplain. The one thing, and it's so much to say, but the one thing that Islam gives a person is direction. It gives a person a disciplined and structured life. So many of the men who are behind the walls, they come from an environment where a lot of times there's no discipline. A lot of times there's no structure. A lot of times they come from a lifestyle of drug addiction, alcohol addiction. And so the tenets of Islam offers them a structured, disciplined way of life. We often like to say it's not just a religion, but it's a way of life. So I found that many of the men who sincerely adhere to the principles of Islam, they're able to overcome some of their negative lifestyle habits. And hopefully they're able to carry it on, not just while they're in jail or incarcerated, but they're able to carry on those life skills that they've learned and those good habits on out into the community. Well, see, I by the grace of Allah, I've never been incarcerated. I've always worked in this facility. So, nice. But that relationship, again, as believing in Allah and believing that one day we are going to have to stand before Allah, then that relationship is what keeps me from, you know, staying away from drugs, staying away from stealing and crime, staying away from getting involved in things that might not be helpful, helpful for me or for my health and things like that. So that's what the thing, the relationship with Allah has done for you. When you believe in Allah or you believe in God, then your goal is to try to please Him, to try to do those things that you believe will please God. And so that's the best thing in trying to solidify that relationship and make it stronger. Ramadan is in the lunar calendar, the ninth calendar month. And this was the month that Allah revealed the first verses of the Holy Quran. And so the tradition is that the Muslim fast from sun up, from dawn until sunset. We eat nothing, no food, no drink, no relationships with your mate, no sexual relations with your mate. We strive to stay away from gossip and backbiting and things that are negative in hopes to please Allah and get closer to Allah. So for the people that are behind the walls, the people who are incarcerated, by the grace of Allah, these years, they are now, the institution actually provides the meals for the brothers. They changed the schedule for the eating, so they allow the brothers to eat the pre-dawn meal, what we call suhoor, and then they serve their meal after sunset. Before the COVID-19, we were able to congregate and have our prayers in congregation. So the institution, and this is across the country, in the federal system, the state system, from here to California and back, they try to accommodate the Muslim inmates the best they can to participate in Ramadan. You know, a lot of brothers who come into the fold of Islam while they're incarcerated, they really appreciate the brotherhood. You know, the Muslims have a very strong brotherhood, a strong rank. So, you know, in jail, people are either attracted to gangs or they're attracted to a religious group. And so a lot of the brothers come in because of that brotherhood. And then after they begin to read the Quran, after they begin to actually study the actual tenets of the faith, then those men, if they're sincere, it begins to change their life from within, change their heart, change their perspective, gives them some a different look of life, you know. So I can only say that you'll find if you talk to 10 people and ask them what attracted them about Islam, you probably get 10 different answers. But I do know that one of the things that holds the brothers good, holds the brothers is their, is the brotherhood, the friendships that they get from the men inside. You can definitely see the change in the people who are incarcerated. From back in the day, when we say in the 70s and 80s, the inmates or the convicts, they were very focused in many cases. You know, like the saying is, do time, but don't let time do you. So a lot of the brothers who went to, were incarcerated, they were able to go and study. Many of them got their bachelor's degree. Many of them got skills and trades that were beneficial. Today's incarceration is more warehousing, lock up, and many of the opportunities of going to school, many of the opportunities of trade schools and whatnot are not there. Another thing is the, unfortunately, many of the young men who are incarcerated today, they don't have any education. It's very sad. Many of them, and they don't have even an aspiration to want to learn. That's the part that's even sadder than not knowing. They don't even have an aspiration to want to learn.
So a lot of guys like that, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah.
A lot of guys like that just what? Whittle their time away and just become empty shells while they sit in jail?
Well, that, and then, you know, get involved in negative activities. You know, get involved with, you know, drugs. There's drugs in jail. There's gangs. They still try to practice extortion and crime activity while they're in jail. And then, you know, when they get out, when their time is up, since they hadn't spent any time, you know, trying to better themselves or improve themselves, more than likely they're going to go back to the same place they came from, and then they end up back in jail. Yeah.
Thank you. Francis, would you please read Keontae's question? Can you see it?
Yes, absolutely. So Keontae said, do you find it harder to reach the inmates nowadays since they're so much different than the inmates from previous years?
Yes and no. For me now, I'm working at Metropolitan Transition Center, what they call Metro. It used to be the old Maryland Penitentiary. At the time it was the penitentiary, it was, you dealt with people, lifers, you know, big sentence, 20 to life, double life, 10 years, 20 years. Now the Metro is pretrial. When I say pretrial, they're just being detained, waiting for trial. And so many of the guys there, they're just there figuring, well, I'm going to get out in a few days. So it's not consistent. I don't have a lot of time with them. It's a younger crowd. You know, it's a younger crowd. These guys, a lot of them are from 20 to 30 years old. And they still haven't hit them yet. When you go to the penitentiary and the judge has given you a 40-year sentence, after a while, it clicks. Wow, I'm going to be here for a long time. And then you settle back and you settle in and you find a routine. And part of the routine is maybe you go to study class, maybe you go to the library, maybe you go a class or there like that. So that's what's the difference. I'll tell you one thing that's very unique about being an employee in an institution. You know, a lot of people on the outside, you think of everybody being a terrible person, a killer, a gangster, or a criminal. But I found that some of the most interesting conversations, some of the most intelligent, most articulate people that I've ever met are behind the walls. And so when you first go inside as an employee, you have to be very careful not to prejudge people and treat people all like you're this or that. Because many of the guys there, and I don't know how many, but many of the guys there are really innocent. They have bad representation, or they just found themselves in the wrong place at the wrong time. So it's very interesting. Now, I will share with you, as a side note, I worked at the facility once, and the first time I met Charles Manson. And, you know, he was in the cell. I was talking to somebody, and it was just really interesting standing before this guy, and actually he threw something on me. Now, it turned out to be water, but you know, that's one thing. When you work in certain facilities, certain situations, they have a term where they say they gas you. So sometimes people will throw urine on you or throw feces on you. But luckily, it was just water. Well, you know, the thing is that one of the things about Islam teaches us and it lets us know that every soul is going to die. This is one of the realities of life. And so when you do meet one of the guys and you let him know the situation, then once you start talking to him and try to, you know, console him or try to comfort him and let him know, okay, this is part of the life cycle. I think the biggest hurt for the guys is that they can't go to the service. They're not going to be able to be a part of it. Matter of fact, you know, last week there was a lady who died on 795. She had a car accident. And so I went to see his, the father of her child. And, you know, I had to talk to him about it. And, you know, again, he tried to put on a strong face, because the sad part about being incarcerated, you can't go back to the dorm or the cell crying and broke up, because that looks weak. So that's why we were able to bring that particular detainee or inmate to the office, give them some time to have composure. You know, he might need to sit in my office, talk on the phone, allow him to talk to his family, and give him a few minutes so that he can get, you know, get himself together before he goes back in to the population. When I was in overseas, in not in America, I've seen with my own eyes where family members have to bring food to the people who's incarcerated. So couple that, if you look at America, the people that are in jail, that at the penitentiary, they get medical, they get dental, right? They get three hots and a cot. Now, it's not the hotel, it's not the Hilton, you know. So, you know, it's relative when we say inhumane. There are many laws on the books that regulate the treatment of people who are incarcerated. Like myself, if I mistreat somebody or treat them inhumane, then I'm liable, okay? So I'm not saying that there are not bad conditions. I'm not saying they're not bad employees who do bad things. But I'm saying, as a general rule, the conditions in jail, other than they're uncomfortable, you know, some places are overcrowded, right? But here in Maryland, they try their best to follow what is has been legislated, okay? Legislation, and they do have what you call different groups, advocacy groups, who come in to monitor the conditions of the inmates. And you know, the inmates, if they're organized, they do have a voice. They can get their voice out. I don't have any second thoughts, because my purpose for going to work in the institution was to establish the Islamic community. Many, many years ago, and I give you an example, I think at the Maryland Penitentiary, they actually had to file a lawsuit to establish the chaplaincy for the Islamic chapter. Before, it was just the Christian and the Catholic. And so the people who were Muslims at that time, they were discriminated against. They didn't have their own services and whatnot. So through legislation, through lawsuits, they established that Maryland Penitentiary would have a chaplain, an imam. And from there, now we have several imams across the state, and it's also, we have several imams across the country. I mean, many imams across the country. The drugs now are very addictive, and they're very dangerous. Like, they talk about fentanyl and others, they're very dangerous. And it's a sad situation. We've lost about three generations to drugs. When I was growing up, years and years ago, we didn't have that many people on, you know, hooked on heroin and cocaine. Then, once they introduced crack cocaine in the African American neighborhood, it really took its toll. Now they have this fentanyl, and they have the crack, and they have other things. It has taken its toll on the community, and it does take a toll on the men inside. They do have drug treatment programs, but it's a sad situation. And unfortunately, a lot of the older men who are getting out, they were the guys who were doing, you know, I don't know. I was in Maryland when the governor, I think it was Glenn Denny, he made the statement, life meant life. And so there was a lot of men that had been sentenced like 15 to life, 25 to life. So that 15 or 20 year sentence turned into a life sentence. So now those men are in their 50s, their late 50s, early 60s, right? Mm-hmm. But now the guys who are coming in are, like I say, 20, 25, and, you know, it's going to be a sad. They don't realize. A lot of young men don't realize that when you get into that track, you're going to be there for a long time. And it's sad because, you know, when you get incarcerated, it's not just affecting you. If you have a wife, it affects your children. It affects your parents. It affects your siblings. And it's just a very devastating situation. But I think a lot of the people coming in now, it seems like they're a lot younger. If you read the news, these 14 and 15-year-olds are doing these heinous crimes, committing murder and felonies. So yes. It's sad because they just don't know. What happened is one of my coworkers, she told me, she said, we're here to help those people who want to be helped, and we're here to keep it safe for those people that can't protect themselves. So you just have to keep the perspective. We're not here. We can't save everybody, but we can help those who want to be helped. So that's the mindset I have to have, is just be able to offer help to somebody who wants to be helped, who wants to change and to grow. Right. Well, there's a saying that the prison is the new mental health ward, you know. A lot of people do need mental health. But what we do offer at most of the facilities, they do have social workers, they have psychologists, they have psychiatrists. They do offer the men who need it, there is, you know, the medication, and they try to facilitate the needs. You have to be balanced. Sometimes I get a little heated. You know the old expression, sometimes you wish you could just smack somebody and just pop them upside the head and say, wake up, you know. But you have to deal with personalities. Sometimes a person might need a nice soft voice, you know, and then you get somebody that you have to be a little harder with, a little stern, a little more disciplined, tough talk, tough love. I would say I want to be known as a person who was faithful and true to what he committed to, and honest. And most importantly, I was a good friend. I mean, friendship means a lot to me. So I like to be known as a person who was a true friend. You know, those people who know me will say, that was a good brother.